morning. You're listening to WNHHLP 103.5 FM, New Haven's home for community radio. I'm Mubaraka Ibrahim, and this is Mornings with Mubaraka here on 103.5 FM in New Haven on your radio dial, as well as streaming live on the newhavenindependent.org. And you can find us everywhere. Instagram, Facebook, Fit Muslimah, Facebook, New Haven Independent. So there's no excuse not to listen, because we're here and we're everywhere. Welcome to this wonderful Wednesday morning. And today our guest is Millie Greneau. Welcome, Millie, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mubaraka. Great pleasure to be here with you.
Awesome. So Millie has a very interesting story. You're going to want to tune in for this, because Millie is an ex-nun turned nightclub singer.
That's true. That's true.
Crazed in chaos and then found oasis in the overwhelm.
Yeah.
And she's also a neighbor and a great friend. So that's the most important part. So welcome, Millie. And today we are going to chat a little bit about your story, about what is Oasis. We're going to talk about joy. We're going to talk about stress. And hopefully we are going to help our listeners and the people who are tuning in have less stress and more joy in their life.
Exactly.
So, Millie, tell us a little bit about... I think I want you to share your ex-nun to nightclub singer story.
Oh, wow. Well, do we have about 3 weeks, or should I give the condensed version?
Can you condense it in 3 minutes?
Okay. So, Mubaraka, I think like you, ever since I was a kid, I wanted to do something that would just like help the whole world, you know, and just be whoever I was and bring that in the best way possible. So when I was raised in Kentucky with my very Catholic family, the absolute best thing I could do was to become a nun, you know?
Really?
I sometimes think if I had been raised Brooklyn Jewish, I might be an attorney or a doctor or something. But where I was then, it was like be a nun and be a missionary nun.
Mm.
So I went that path, and thankfully, I went that path because it brought me to Latin America, where the people there just opened up my soul and my heart in ways that had never been opened before.
Wow.
And as that happened, I realized I think God wasn't really calling me to be a nun. He was calling me to be Millie in the world with other people. So it was like it was a very tough transition. Like I used to think it was unique, you know, I'm the only one who left this. And I realize we all do that. We may be on a path that we think is our genuine path for a lifetime, and life changes. We change and find out, oh, there is another street I'm supposed to walk down. So that, through a process, wasn't easy. Sometimes I thought it was the end of my life, that I was like in a dark tunnel that I would never come out of, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was music that helped me come out of that. Mm-hmm. And it's my gratitude to the people in Latin America who helped me kind of refind my joy, reclaim my music. And so I can remember one, it was a miserable, snowy weekend in New Haven, when I had moved here, kind of by accident. I wanted to be where I didn't know anybody and start fresh.
Ah.
So I was living here, got a job, didn't know people. And that weekend, it was like, okay, what can you do? So I got out my guitar and practiced all of these songs that I had learned. And the next week, I auditioned at all the Mexican restaurants in a 20-mile
really?
Radius of New Haven. And that's how it got me out of, like, what I was, hiding out in the closet or wherever, out into the world. And from that, it was just like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do.
Wow, really?
Yeah, you didn't hear that story before.
No, I didn't hear that story. This is my first time hearing the story, which is great.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So when you, so that's how you kind of like transitioned. And
yeah.
So your
instrument of choice is guitar.
Yeah.
And your music of choice is?
Well, you know, it's Latino and jazz. My real instrument is my voice. Mm-hmm. I'm not a colossal guitar player. I can play enough. I can't play jazz tunes the way Joe Pass can or somebody.
Okay.
But it's really connecting with people. And oftentimes, even when I'm doing in a club or wherever, I get people singing with me, you know, whether it's in English or Spanish.
I think you said a couple of things that really struck me is that, you know, we all have life transitions and the path that you start off in is not necessarily the path that you have to continue to go.
Yeah.
There is life transition. I know I often say I feel like that I've lived a dozen different lives because I've transitioned so much. And I've always believed in that you can always reinvent and redefine yourself.
Yes.
Because you change and you evolve. And
absolutely.
That just means you're alive.
Yeah.
Right? Because if we didn't change, that is literally the definition of dying. Right?
Yes. Yes.
We learned that in elementary school. Things that change are alive. Right.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting how people really become stagnant and they're not even conscious of that. And they feel stuck. And the stuckness comes from not believing in the change.
Yeah.
But that's awesome. And that was like, that's like a huge change. That's not like a little teeny change that you make. Like, that's like a really big change.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Millie, tell me a little bit about life before your accident.
Okay, life before the accident. After I left the convent, I was wild and crazy and did all the things that I had never done.
Just real quick, take me back. How long were you in the convent? What age to what age?
8 years in the convent. 8 years. And it was the years of my 20s. So, and I think when I entered, sometimes I say I was 23, but emotionally I was about 13. You know, I hadn't done a lot. I had lived pretty sheltered life in a way in Kentucky, working class family, Catholic. And so when I left, it was like, oh my God, there's this whole world in front of me. And I was in New Haven 2 years. Then I lived in Barcelona, Spain for 3 years, studied more guitar. That's when I really began singing more too. I was with a group there. We called ourselves the Ragamuffins, the Ragamuffins.
Really?
Yeah. An English guy, English woman. Anyway, we had fun. And then I realized I didn't want to live in Spain my whole life. So I came back to the States, settled in New Haven, thinking I was going to California, but somehow ended up staying in New Haven.
New Haven has that effect on you.
You never know.
You come here, you just end up here like twice as long,
right?
Five times as long as you're supposed to be.
Right.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, but I loved the mix of New Haven, how many cultures there are. And I knew I wanted to keep up the Spanish-speaking part. And there were so many Latinos here in New Haven. So I settled in, began working, was doing a lot of social work at that time, working with inner-city families, teaching Head Start kids how to learn through songs, developed a whole program in that. And then eventually I went to Nicaragua, and on the trip to Nicaragua, I met the son of the man that I would end up marrying that I would have never met prior to that. So bring us up to late 80s. Then I'm married for the first time in my life, and I inherited 3 teenage stepsons.
Wow.
So you have 4 children. You have 3 sons. Mm. So you know what? That was another.
And to come in the teenage years, Lord have mercy.
Yes, yes. So that was another transition, and that's what led up to me being kind of crazier than usual. Thinking I was balancing everything. I had my own business, was writing books, I had this new family. And then you know about my accident.
Right. So life was crazy for you. And that just having, besides having your own business and writing books, just 3 teenage sons would themselves be
enough
for chaos.
Yep.
And so in this busy, super busy life that you have, you also was very physically active.
Yeah.
And so tell us a little bit about how that accident happened and your transition.
Okay, I really did value my body. I was, thankfully, I have a good body that's healthy, and I would hike and jog, do yoga, do qigong. And this one afternoon in July, it was Joe, my business partner, said, Millie, it's a great day. Do you want to go for a bike ride? And I thought, ah, I only have five things to do. They could wait. You know, the kids can take care of themselves. So I put the bike on the Camry. We drove out to Deep River, which is about 42 miles from here. Went on this gorgeous country roads bike, and I still don't know what happened. Joe thinks I must have hit a pothole and was flown over the handlebars. Mm. And I was knocked unconscious. He thought I was dead because I didn't move. Mm. It was before cell phones, so he didn't know what to do. Stay with me, look for help.
Right.
And he said, finally, a car came, and somehow or other, they got me to the green at Deep River, which is like population 1,000. And all I remember is coming to twice during that time. And I remember the hands of the EMT woman. LifeStar helicopter picked me up. Mm. And I thought, she's good. You know, and I often think if she hadn't been there with calm, competent presence, would I be sitting here with you today?
Mm.
You know? So I heard the whir of the helicopter and felt her hands. And that's all I remember till I woke up again in the ER, which was more chaos.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. And so what was that? What kind of injuries did you sustain after that?
I didn't know it till the next morning when I was in the bed and the doc came in and I heard him say, female, bicycle accident, 3 concussions, ruptured kidney. And I thought, oh, I guess that's me.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
And I couldn't work full time for about 6 months. It was like really, it was a forced slowdown for hard-headed Millie. Maybe I needed something that drastic to make me chill and ask those big questions like, who am I now?
Mm.
And what am I here on this earth for? It had been kind of lost in the rapid pace of everything, which we all get caught up in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to a 103.5 FM WNHH, also streaming live on newhavenindependent.org and on our Facebook and Instagram pages. Thank you for joining us. If you are just joining us, we are talking to Millie Grenot, who's telling us a little bit about her journey from chaos to calm. So you are sitting home for 6 months in your hammock.
Yeah.
Life had to wait.
Yeah.
Forced to wait.
Yeah.
And how do you come to that realization?
You know, it was, I didn't go like to Gaylord rehab or anything. It was summertime and I just was in my backyard hammock, just lying there, trusting that nature would heal me somehow. And I can remember watching the ants crawling underneath the hammock and the rhododendron next to me. It knew how to open. So it was like, I didn't want to listen to any inspirational tapes or anything. It was just like, be here, breathe, and see what appears. Mm-hmm. And that's when I got to thinking about those big questions and realized that when I went back to work, unless I did something different from before, I'd get caught up in the rat race again and lose sight of that. So it was like a precious time that all the gifts that had been given to me by many different people in my life in Latin America, Alana Rubenfeld training with her, other wisdom people, my friend in Barcelona, it was just like, how can I find a simple, powerful way to make these usable for me? So they won't cost anything. I don't have to go away to a retreat. I can just use. So that's when I came up with my 4 60-second oasis strategies.
Mm.
And you know what an oasis is, right?
Yes. Yes.
It's a place of refreshment, peace, community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. When you when you look at the new wave, because how long ago did this happen?
This was over 20 years ago.
So 20 years ago. That was probably before we start studying mindfulness.
Yeah.
And there was so much study on stress reduction.
Yeah.
Did you have a plan? Was this a part of a plan of returning back to your life and not getting back to the chaos?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I had a meditation practice somewhat, but it wasn't until like the mid-90s when I was already doing these OASIS strategies that mindfulness and began coming in and all of the neuroscience that I found out about. It was like, oh, yes, these are verifying exactly what I'm doing.
What was, when you came up with your strategies, what was some of the immediate effects that you felt?
I knew that if I did a simple, like my little 4D, which I call four directions, or my simple three breath countdown, within 60 seconds, I could toss that crazed feeling and get to a place of more clarity and more calm, because my brain could work. I wasn't on this like knee-jerk reaction. It was like, oh, what now?
And was that a process for you?
Oh, yeah.
Were you, what would have been your kind of like knee-jerk reaction before you came to that realization?
Well, it still happens today when I don't do it. Like when I was driving here, I thought, oh, there's school buses stopping. Will I get here on time? And I could feel that coming in. It was like, and I thought, okay, remember, just exhale. Let's go. You left in enough time. You'll get there.
Mm.
Oh, even if a fire keeps you from getting there, it's not the end of the world.
Mm.
Mubarak will understand, you know, and my family will still love me. So just stay calm, drive your car, exhale.
Awesome. And that changes your physical reaction.
Yeah.
Some of the interesting things that I found when I was doing some research about stress and overwhelm, they actually do, like, there's like major studies about how stress affects people.
Absolutely.
And it says 77% of people who experience stress experience some type of physical symptoms.
Yeah.
And part of your technique is paying attention to those symptoms. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I love talking about that. And in a way, that's what helps me recognize if I feel a headache coming on or if my stomach is tight, instead of immediately taking an aspirin or doing something that takes care of the symptom, it's like, okay, something's going on that's affecting me. And if I take the minute to see, oh, what is this? Like even today with the school bus, I could feel it here in my stomach and here. And it's like, oh, what is this? And simply taking that instant to not get hooked. Sometimes they call it hijacking your emotions when you get caught in that fear or anger thing.
Okay.
And that way your brain can't think because all the energy is going into the like fight or flight thing.
Mm.
So simply taking a few seconds to breathe allows your brain to consider, okay, what is going on? And is there something I can do about it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. And so how do you recommend people get to that point?
By practice.
Practice.
It's like anything, you know. How does a baby learn to walk? How does a kid learn to brush his teeth? You just do it and keep doing. I keep doing it every day. It's not that I'm totally enlightened and life is always smooth. No, it's like, oh, by practicing it, I used to be the queen of worry. Like I could get myself into a real state and bother everybody around me. And now by doing this, I still worry. Doesn't last as long. Mm. I can change the channel and move from worry to action.
Mm.
So it's practice. You know that from your training and working with people and changing diet, changing how they exercise. Yeah.
Absolutely. A little bit of everything. One of the interesting thing, I can't remember if I was, I think I was watching a video somewhere and it talked about kind of like that process of making the change. And of course it stuck with me because it related it to diet and exercise, right? And it was saying that, you know, to create that change in your brain is not just about adding on positivity, but also about taking away your negative habits. And it said it's sort of like when you want to get in shape.
Yeah.
If you work out every day, you're going to get results. Mm-hmm. But if you take away the junk food that you eat, the results are going to be even better.
Right.
And so rewiring your brain works the same way. You can add mindfulness. You can add meditation. You can add the practice of thinking positive, and it's going to be helpful. But taking away the negative habits also makes it even more effective.
So I love you saying that. Sometimes when I'm doing a workshop, I bring my barbell with me to say, look, if I raise this, I'll just raise this here. If I'm raising this, which muscles are growing? It's the ones here, right? Not the ones here. So that if I am constantly or very often on the worry channel, guess which wiring is growing. So if I recognize that and put that down and pick up, say, oh, find something beautiful, channel. Like, I love how you look gorgeous, and you always look gorgeous, but today it's this light blue. And it's like, if I go to the beauty channel, find something beautiful, I'm strengthening that positive wiring. And every time I don't feel the worry, it diminishes like leaves on a tree. If you don't water it, it's going to, and the other gets stronger the more you practice it with consciousness.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. One of the research studies that I came across, they talked about that the average person experiences 3 times as many positive interaction as they do negative interaction, but we focus on the negative.
Yeah. And you know, the research behind that is it's so true that to survive, that really fear flight thing was built into us because it was dangerous for to survive.
Absolutely. If you see a tiger, you got to be able to run.
Exactly. But the trouble with us is that we can get in that fight or flight thing about almost anything and stay there.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to nurture the other, which is a more human development than simply the surviving. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things that I love about the emails that you send out, so Millie sends out some wonderful emails, is that at the end of the email, you always give little tips of things people can do immediately to help. Quickly give us a tip before we take a little station.
Oh, well, you could do one right now if you're listening. Just pick up anything that's near you. Pick up anything, and if possible, find something that you like and look at it and either choose a color or something that's appealing to you. And I call this like bringing in something positive. So what we'll simply do is I'm looking at this delicious green color. I really like, that's like, it is an oasis. So look at whatever you have, find something beautiful, and on purpose, inhale. Let's inhale together 3 times, just bringing in that beauty. And on the exhale, let go of stinky stuff. Ready to go with me?
Absolutely.
Okay, here we go. And just take a couple seconds to see how you feel now.
definitely feel more calmer.
Uh-huh.
For sure.
Yeah.
And appreciate, I realize that I really do like wood. I'm actually looking at like a wood coaster, and I was thinking to myself, well, I actually do like wood. Like, I have hardwood floors at home. I have hardwood. I actually like wood.
Yeah.
It's pretty.
Good. So it activated your brain.
Right. Of appreciation.
Your emotions.
Absolutely.
And your calmer. So your whole system, your digestive system is easier. And if we took your blood pressure, it would probably be down a little bit. So
awesome.
Magic in three breaths.
In three breaths. If you're just tuning in, you're tuning in to Mornings with Mubaraka on 103.5 FM, WNHHLP, also streaming live on newhavenindependent.org and on our New Haven Independent Facebook page, Fit Muslima page, and my Instagram page, so you can catch us a little bit of everywhere. So there's no excuse for you not to have less stress and more joy in your life after today. So let's talk about the second part, more joy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we know that stress is something that everybody experiences, but it is the kind of like the decreasing your stress is the taking away of the negative. How would you suggest that we start increasing joy?
Well, in a way, we just did it by that simple exercise. That's one way. Another way we can do it is noticing what does stress us so that we become more aware of it and we're not simply a victim of the stress then. We get more knowledge. And if we can recognize that and say, oh, what might I do right this instant to find something that will be healthier for me, more appealing, more joyful? Like in the traffic this morning, I looked out and the sky was phenomenal. You know, it was there the whole time, but I was just focused on the school bus, you know. However, noticing that I was focused on the school bus and it was upsetting me was my cue to do something different.
Mm.
So it's these simple little powerful things that we can do. Does that respond to your question about joy?
Yeah. Pulling in the beauty.
Pulling in
and
the
being
beauty.
Conscious of it.
Yeah.
Being conscious of it. You know, I was talking to one of my groups the other day, and one of the things that I was telling people about joy is that it is different than just saying I feel blessed, right?
Yeah.
To me, saying I'm blessed is a passive way of experience joy. It's like something is giving it to you. You don't have to do anything. God is blessing me. Oh, I'm blessed. But when you claim joy, you're an active participant in that. And so that really does change the way that you experience everything from being kind of like a passive passenger as opposed to actually engaging.
I love that, Mubaraka, because even as you're saying it, you can see how actively you are, and you are lighting up. Your face is lighting up the world now. Because if we're simply like, oh, yes, I've really been blessed.
I know.
And sit on my sofa.
I have to tell you, that's actually a pet peeve of mine.
Yeah.
People are like, yes, I'm blessed. Oh, yeah, really? Right?
So what will you do with it now?
I know.
Yeah.
I know. So now that you've been giving this blessing of life, of breath, of whatever, like, how do you really engage and show your appreciation for that, right? Uh-huh. So saying, oh, yeah, I'm blessed because I'm alive today. Really? Is that all God gave you? Really? That's the only thing you can think of being blessed for is the fact that you can breathe.
Yes.
Yes. All of the other things. And so what I encourage people to do is don't just say, you know, oh, I'm blessed because, you know, I can wake up and I can see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Appreciate what you can see, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I appreciate that I can look out my window and I'm watching a blue jay, and I appreciate the beauty, the color of it, the fact that it is a creation that's different to me, but just as alive and just as important as a part of our ecosystem and the way that our world works. Like, really think about the details.
Yes.
I think that that is how we really experience joy, not the overall arching things of, oh, I woke up this morning and opened my eyes.
Yes.
So did the person who is a vegetable in the hospital, but you have the ability to do much more. So how are you going to show that gratitude?
Yeah. Right? And even, I love that active part of it, because even when you were describing looking out and taking in the beauty, and it brought you the awareness of the whole world, which means then it ramifies that you'll want to take care of this world.
Yeah.
It's calling you to action that reverberates, ripples out, and makes a change.
Absolutely.
And the people around you notice. If you're in the line at Edge of the Woods and you're like, oh my God, I don't have any money. And it's just, and if you're there and it's like, oh, you don't have to be like bubbling over all the time, but just the fact of what we're talking about, reclaiming our joy. Mm. It is our birthright.
It is.
It is.
It is.
And if we don't use it, what a waste for us and for the whole world.
And when, and not only that, but you also, when you claim joy, you really do. It's contagious.
Yes.
It really is contagious.
Yes.
And you can make it contagious. You know, this reminds me of the story of, so Millie has a certification for Oasis.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And when I took the certification a few years ago, my oldest son attended one of the classes with me. He was in high school at the time.
Yep.
And so one of the things that Millie encourages in her certification is just having a book of gratitude. Mm-hmm. And he came home one day and he didn't take the certification. He just like came the last day of graduation. And so he picked up little bits and pieces. And so he told us how he started taking this book around, and when he saw someone in a bad mood, even his teachers, like he would go to school, and if a teacher had an attitude, he would just go up to them and say, I have a book of gratitude. Would you write one thing in here that you're grateful for?
Wow.
Forcing them to come out of that negative space. And he would tell me how he did it to school teachers. He did it to principals. He did it to his friends in school. He even would do it to the cashiers in a grocery store.
I didn't know that till now.
Yes. He went in a grocery store once. He came home. He was like, Mommy, he's like, the cashier had such a nasty attitude. She's like, she was having a really bad day. And so I pulled my book out and I said, I have a book of gratitude. Could you write one thing in here that you're grateful for? And her attitude completely changed.
And he was 18.
He wasn't even 18. I think he was like, I don't know. I think he was probably about 16 or 17. Yeah. I think he was a junior at the time.
Okay.
It spreads and you can spread it. And it's really interesting. And I had forgotten about that story until we start talking about,
like, and I never heard it.
Yeah. So, wow. It really does make a big impact.
Yeah.
And, him doing that shows that it can be any level.
Yes.
And I always thought to myself, when I first started intentionally implementing mindfulness as my kids were young, I always tried to share with them because I feel like learning it young can make such a huge difference, right? So some of the things that I know now, I just sometimes I think I was like, my goodness, why didn't I try to learn this when I was like 20?
Right.
Like so much of my life would have been better if I had tried to learn this when I was younger. And so teaching it to kids younger makes a huge difference. I think that is one of the advantages of where we are today in studying mindfulness and studying stress and studying how it doesn't just affect you mentally, but affects you physically.
Absolutely.
And you grow up with that.
Yep.
And we know, not only do we know that and it goes so much deeper than that, that it can literally change your DNA.
Yes.
So we have confirmed research about African Americans in particular, that we are still feeling the epigenetic effects of slavery.
Yeah.
Because stress literally changes the structure of the DNA. And if we can get the tools to prevent that from happening and even mitigate it, it can make a huge difference, not just for us, but as we know, generations to come.
Yes.
I tell my daughter often, I said, you know, every woman carries three generations because we are born, women are born with every egg that they will ever produce throughout their life.
Wow.
And so you are literally, when you give birth, you are giving birth to your grandchild.
Wow.
So for women in particular, it is so essential. It's the effects are astronomical.
Yeah.
Because you are literally giving birth to your grandchild.
Yeah. What a beautiful way to look at it. In a culture which often looks at what are the benefits quarterly? What do I get in a half year? What's the money benefit? And you're really looking at the whole generational consequences and impact.
It is.
So when you're talking about sharing these simple strategies with children, that's why I'm so excited that some of the Oasis graduates are working with preschool kids and with parents, so that the parents and teachers begin to do these simple mindfulness waking up strategies.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's important that we teach our children how to avoid kind of like those pitfalls. And I know one of the things as parents, being a parent of now young adults and teens, sometimes they are in a point where we're like, nothing that we say is mattering.
Right.
But then as they get older, you start picking up, they were paying attention the whole time. They just were trying to act like they wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
So it is just being consistent. Just know, okay, it's just, it's just the teenage crazy years.
Yeah. Well, I was remembering one story that Renee, who did the Oasis training a long time ago, and she had three young children. Mm. And she was with the youngest one, taking the youngest one to the dentist. And I think that the little one was five. And usually she cries like crazy going to the dentist because she's so afraid of it. But this time she was very quiet. And Renee was concerned, like, what's going on? And she said, what's happening, Abby? And she said, I'm doing my three-breath countdown so I'm not stressed. So she knew how to do it. And Renee was, oh, okay, okay.
I love that. And how old was she?
She was five.
Five. And then, you know what? And that is so awesome because it is going to last her whole life. It really is. It really does make a major impact. And that's one of the reasons why I am so passionate to help women in particular. Guys are important, not to slight the guys. But women in particular, because we're the primary caretakers. Yeah. We are the teachers. And not the men. Let me justify before I get some hate mail. And not the men are not important. Men are super, super important. In fact, I was just thinking this morning, and I literally had this thought this morning, is yesterday my husband and my son was getting ready to go to a meeting, and my husband was reminding my son how to put in a collar stay. And as I was sitting here watching him, I was thinking to myself, I would like, thank God for fathers, because just little things like that, I would have no idea about, like, what is a collar stay? Well, I had to help him put it in, so now I know what a collar stay is. So apparently, just a little side note, completely unrelated, men have on their lapel of their collar, there is actually a little pocket that a hard object, it comes with the shirt, goes in to keep the collar down so it doesn't turn up.
Oh.
And apparently, if you lose it, you can actually use a paper clip or break off. My husband said he has been as desperate as breaking off a piece of the Starbucks stick stirrer. So apparently they do that so that the collar stays down. And as my husband says, you don't look like it's your first time walking into church.
Oh, wow.
So, and I was just like, so that's my appreciation for men.
And we really could add to that,
yes,
too.
Yes, we can add to that. So yeah. I appreciate men. But women, you know, we are such a central role in raising children and teaching children and giving them those life lessons mm-hmm. that is going to carry on.
Yeah.
And we tend to focus more on that emotional. They get their emotional health majorly from their mothers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's so important that as women, not only that, for them and for ourselves, because as we talked about earlier, women literally give birth, you know, to their grandchildren. So it's really important that as women that we are conscious of that and passing down those helpful habits that's going to help them for throughout their entire lives.
And I would say this in support of men, too, that there are many men who are waking up to this in different ways.
Mm.
Like, thankfully, my husband raised children in a communal house where the men and the women shared in the upbringing.
Mm.
And there's so much more. Remember how it used to be men weren't supposed to show emotions. They're supposed to be tough. Don't cry.
Yeah.
That's beginning to shift.
It is.
And it's rippling out so that it's changing the fabric of our culture.
Yeah. I think that the new generations coming up.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we come up with more research and we find a lot of empirical evidence about the importance of emotional intelligence.
Exactly.
Right? That it is making a shift in our society.
Yeah.
And not just a shift in how men love and relate and communicate, but also a shift in what women expect from them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we are making that shift from boys don't cry, suck it up,
right.
to giving them permission
to
express their emotions.
Yeah.
And as parents, that's really important that we do that, because that's what they look to us for, their permission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listening and receiving.
Absolutely.
Encouraging. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for joining me, Millie. If you want to find out more about Less Stress and More Joy, we are doing a free web class tomorrow at 1 p.m.
Yeah.
And you can go to reclaimmyjoy.com, reclaimmyjoy.com, and you can sign up for that. And we're going to talk a little bit more tomorrow about how to have less stress and more joy in your life. Some of that actually scientific research around rewiring your brain for more happiness.
Yeah.
What else am I missing out?
Practical ways of doing it for yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You are going to go to reclaimmyjoy.com. On Facebook, I'll put it inside of the link, and as well as on Instagram and inside of the comments. And I want to thank you so much. This was fun. And I look forward to tomorrow. It's going to be fun too.
I'll give you two high fives. It was great fun, as always. Thanks,
awesome.
Mubaraka.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Mornings with Mubaraka on 103.5 FM WNHHLP every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. And I want to remind you, as I do every week, be a voice and not an echo.